Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, today, by the grace of God, we are embarking on the study of the sixth chapter, which is called the Yoga of Meditation or the Yoga of Practice. Both are very significant names. But before we start that, let us do some recapitulation to connect ourselves with the theme of this very important chapter. As we see that the science of Bhagavad Gita, the science of living a purposeful and meaningful life, is presented in a rationally coherent manner, poetically sublime, and also practically very efficient. And it is told for everyone. It doesn't matter whether a person is born in one place or another place. It doesn't matter at all if that person is highly learned or ignorant. What is expected is only this, that there is an urge to lead a meaningful life, a life that is glued or geared to a purpose. And we are often confused in our life about what is the exact purpose of our life. In Bhagavad Gita, that dilemma is indicated in the Arjuna's problem right in the beginning, the first chapter, that there is tremendous confusion as to what I should be doing at this particular point. You all know that Bhagavad Gita started where Arjuna, a great warrior and one who was having these great qualities of head and heart, was very tuned to a just life, had the idea of goodness and justice, also idea of firmly rooted idea of justice, duty, belongingness to family and clan, also was trying to seek a sense of revenge against the cousins, and so with a resolve to fight the war, he came to the battlefield. But when the battle was about to begin, now his mind filled with all that depression, remorse, also what should I be doing right now was not very clear to him. On the one hand, his sense of duty told him that he must fight this righteous war. He came there after thinking all pros and cons, and he was sure that the battle is right, it must be fought, that is his duty. But then there is this attraction of one's family, kith and kin, also the fear that I may lose the battle, I may get killed in the battle. All these things were just pouring in Arjuna's mind and making him not able to decide what is to be done. And so he there tells Lord Krishna, who was his charioteer. This is again a very sublime analogy given here, that charioteer means the one who is driving the vehicle. So, the master tells to where to go to the driver. But here the driver is so intelligent. The driver has been actually told that this is the place that you are to go. But now Arjuna's mind is vacillating and is thinking that no, probably it is better not to fight. And he makes a big philosophy of out of it. It is really cowardice and vacillation of Arjuna. But we do not, as human beings, we are very intelligent and therefore do not admit our follies easily. We try to use our reason to show that how I am right. Even though I know inside that I am not right, yet it doesn't suit our convenience to admit it to others that it is my weakness that is preventing me from fighting this war. Arjuna tried there, therefore, to justify that why and how it is not good to fight the war. And expected, he gave a long lecture there to Lord Krishna. Krishna was all the time just smiling. He was not making any comment, let Arjuna complete his lecture. That in that lecture, Arjuna gave all the reasons for not fighting the war, saying that it causes so much of destruction, so many people get killed in the war, a lot of people will lose their relations, their support, the family system will get destroyed by this terrible war. And it is good, therefore, that we desist from it. It doesn't matter, these evil Kauravas and the cousins, these evil Kauravas, they don't understand. But we understand, and they may not be understanding, so let them have whatever they want, but let us stop fighting, let us get away from here. It doesn't matter that even if we have to just go on begging our food, if we lose everything, still it doesn't matter. Not only that, even if I get killed in this by this, seeing me not fighting, even if these evil Kauravas come and kill me, I am ready for that also. I don't think it is good to do the battle. It is a big sin that we were going to commit. And Krishna listens to all that. And when Arjuna was expecting a pat on his back, he actually blasts Arjuna. Vaccine, him, in fact, that what cowardice has overtaken you, Arjuna? This is just you are a coward, that's all. These words of wisdom do not become you. You are not talking these, you are not telling these out of true conviction, but you are just flattering them, you are just parroting them. It is against your convictions. You are just trying to hide your cowardice, that's all. And then Arjuna understands and surrenders to Lord Krishna, saying that, yes, I don't understand what is happening. My all power of decision making is shrouded by this delusion. I don't know what is right and what is wrong, so please take me out of this mire of confusion and delusion. Then Lord sees that the problem with Arjuna, and that is problem of all of us, we suffer in this world because of our attachments. We have so many attachments to various persons and things in the world. But the very nature of these things is to change and vanish. And when that happens, we feel a terrible jolt. We suffer because of that. So, our Lord diagnoses Arjuna's problem. In fact, the problem of all of us. Why Bhagavad Gita is relevant to us? Because it is not just problem of Arjuna, but the problem of all of us is presented there. We do have this dilemma coming in our life so often that I don't know what to do in this situation. On the one hand, my conscience is telling me to do this, but on the other hand, my attachment is telling me to do something different. I get caught in between these two. Now, what to do? So, Arjuna is told that, look Arjuna, that your problem is this suffering and the delusion that you are feeling is because of these terrible attachments to I and mine. Our world is divided like this, and we have the sense of I, and then this I gets attached to various things which become mine, like my I. And now what this I don't know really. It is impossible to specify what it is. But yet I have this sense that there is something like I. Then that gets connected somehow to certain things in a pleasant or unpleasant way. My body. My house. My property. My relations, my friends, my enemies. See how the my goes on extending. See, my goes on extending like that. We get attached to those things. And this is, these attachments cause the bondage and suffering. We get bound by those things. This attachment again, the diagnosis has to go further a little bit. All these attachments are caused because of the ignorance. That ignorance of this idea that I and this world are two separate entities. There is a line of division is felt in our mind. That I and the world are two separate things, two real things, and therefore this attachment comes. We do not get attachment for things which we know to be unreal. Not only unreal, even when we understand that they are not permanent, we lose attachment for those things. But when we consider this world to be real, permanent, as I see, it is I and mine that division is, and my connections are seen as permanent, and I therefore want to hold on to them, and that becomes bondage. I hold, but then I get bound by my holding. Therefore, you know, freedom is so easy, really speaking. I have to just give up the hold. It is not that there is a rope that is tying me, but I am holding on the rope, and thus I feel that I am bound. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that story, that one sage came to a king's court, and the king asked him, please tell me some way to get out of the bondage. Then the sage, very intelligent person, he gave a very close embrace to one of the pillars there in the courtroom and held it very tightly and started screaming, "Oh, please release me from the bondage of this pillar." And everybody said, well, what a fool you are, just give up the hold, that's it. So he told the king, you see, you have held all these things, and what you need to do, nobody can really free us, that we have to give up the hold. As Swami Vivekananda in that beautiful, very powerful poem, Song of Sannyasins, says that thine is the hand that holds the rope that drags thee on. That is, and we feel that we are being dragged. Give up thy hold, sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. So this is Lord Krishna tried to tell Arjuna that they really, you are immortal. There is no death for either you or anybody here. You are not going to kill anybody. Whom do you think you can kill? What power do you have? It is nobody is going to get killed, because only the bodies come and go, and they come and go anyway. The coming and going of the body is not really death at all. This is a great principle told in the second chapter, a very important principle to understand that we are not the bodies. And just as we are not the shirt that we put on, we are also not the body. It is also just something that has been put on. In fact, we unconsciously take it off many times. Like if it is too warm, then your heavy coats and all you take off. Sometimes because of the heat, you are not even conscious. Unconsciously, you take them off. So similarly, many times the body is just taken off. Suppose you, physically you are sitting here. I was just giving this example a little while ago. You are sitting here physically, but this very heavy topic is going on. Your head is going tangential or even above the head. So after all, although the body is here, you take off the body. Let the body remain here. Let me go somewhere to see the ball game. So the mind has slipped into ball game, gone away. The body has remained here. So you have taken off the body. You are not really body. Because of that situation, the body has remained in one place, the mind has gone somewhere else. So, this is very important to understand and firmly carve on our mind that body is like a clothing. So, that verse that in Bhagavad Gita, it is just as a torn, a worn-out garment is changed for a new one, so also a worn-out body is cast aside for a new one. There it is not really our death, it is just change of garment. A great insight is given into our true nature. And then comes the question, that I understand these things intellectually, that I am really not body, not even mind, not anything changing, because I am unchanging. How can I be something that changes? I understand that. Now how to convert that understanding into practical experience? And this is the beauty of all these Vedantic scriptures, that they do not just tell you the theory, but how to convert that theoretical understanding into very tangible, practical experience. That, yes, I see that I am the whole universe. I am not limited by anything. That I am existence, consciousness, bliss, Chidananda Rupa, Shivoham, Shivoham. One can experience this truth practically. But you have to therefore, for that purpose, follow a path. That path is called technically yoga. Yoga means this conversion. It is providing this interface between theory and practical experience. That is yoga. So, Bhagavad Gita is the theory and as well as practice. This practice was told to Arjuna in the second chapter. It began that, yes, you have to learn to do your actions. The actions that we perform are to be done with the spirit of detachment, knowing that we are not the doer, not expecting the results. It is tough, that is why it requires practice. It won't come automatically. Many times this question is asked. In fact, I myself asked this question many times, that, well, I understand this, but when it is time to put it into practice, why do I forget? It doesn't automatically happen. It doesn't become my experience. Why so? Well, it needs a very dedicated, single-minded practice done with dogged determination for a long, long time. We need to have that commitment for that. And one may say, is it worthwhile? It is the only thing that one can do to make the life fulfilled. Because this alone can bring fulfillment in life. Anything else is, even though you may think that it is easy, it is not bringing fulfillment, so what is the use? That, suppose I tell that, okay, Charles, I will do one thing, that if you dig this, there, I want to dig a pit here, if you dig it, then per foot you dig, I will give you $1. He says, Swami, it is too difficult, you know, to $1 and then I have to dig so much for that. Is there some easy way that I can earn? I will tell, okay, Charles, if you just relax and sip tea, I will give you $100 in fake notes. Now, $100 in fake notes is nothing, you see. He will immediately, as a wise man, will say, okay, I will start digging. It is difficult, but I will get something tangible out of it. Well, that is another thing, yeah. That you don't like tea, suppose whatever you like. It is, but if you are not getting that the real stuff out of it, just fake, then it is useless. So all other things that we crave for in life, they are fake things. That, for example, we crave for money. It is all fake thing. It doesn't bring any tangible happiness in life. We also crave for name and fame. We know. Look at the lives of those who have lot of money. Just that is enough to see. Are they satisfied? Is their life full of happiness? Look at all those celebrities whose life, who have lot of name, fame everywhere. How is their life? So, their life also has a lot of all these problems. It is an empty, vacant life. Therefore, many of them become drug addicts, commit suicides, do all sorts of things which they really wouldn't have done if they are in sane frame of mind. So, therefore, the idea is all the other things except realization or experience of this truth are not going to bring any fulfillment in life. So this is to be understood, that only tangible thing can come in life by realizing the truth. Realization of the truth is the most important thing. Jesus tells that, well, no truth and truth shall make you free. That is the only way one can become free. And that is our goal in life. So therefore, we have to take up that path, difficult or easy. It doesn't matter. Actually, what is apparently difficult, when you learn to do it, you start feeling it not so difficult. You become gradually adept in many such things. So, Arjuna is told about this secret of work. This is called Karma Yoga, technically, the yoga of action. It is changing the pattern in which we do work. And Bhagavad Gita gradually showed that how practicing this, one attains the purification of mind. The desires that bind us, they wane away, they go away. And as they go away, we start feeling the inner exuberance of joy and freedom. It is just something that one can experience in one's own life. You don't have to just believe Lord Krishna, but you will be experiencing in your own life. Each of us can experience this in the proportionate way. I mean, if we practice more, we will see the more results. If we practice less, less results will be seen. But all of us can experience this to the extent we put those things in practice. The cover of ignorance, as it starts thinning, as it starts becoming less and less dense, the inner joy, inner bliss starts manifesting in life. So, and then we will laugh at ourselves. Oh, what a fool I was. I was seeking happiness from this and that. And I thought that going to a zoo will bring me happiness. It is, well, you go see, then you feel that that zoo was too small. I didn't get enough happiness. Let me go to San Diego. There is a big zoo there. So I will see that. Then you see, feel that, well, there must be some bigger zoo somewhere. I must go and see that. It is not really the source of happiness at all. It is, you know, that when the joy from inside starts manifesting, now you know the source. You feel it. You can experience it. So, Arjuna is told that how this yoga is efficacious, and it is a sure path to the realization. And therefore was told that you should not get away from activity. That tendency that, okay, I will so give up the activity and then I will become free. That is a very wrong idea many people harbor. Because we feel that the problem is because of all these works I have to do. Left to myself, I am so peaceful, so free. Not that we are, but we sometimes feel that if I am alone, you know, then no worries. Try to be alone and you will see. After one day of loneliness, People start feeling that, oh, I feel so lonely. You don't like to be alone either. It is very difficult task to remain alone. Many times I have faced these questions that people go saying that this is in this world, there is so much of problem. I want to be alone just by myself. Peacefully I want to remain just by myself. I will go somewhere and live just by myself. After a few days, they say, well, it is so lonely here, nobody. I remember a classic example. A friend of ours, when I used to be in Nagpur, he always would say that it is in this ashrama environment, there are people and all these activities around, not easy to meditate. Let me find some place for meditation. That man had lot of money also, so he said, I will go and make a small cabin for myself in Himalayas. So he went and rented a nice place. After 15 days comes back, hey, what happened? Yes, I went there, it was okay, the place, but food was a problem, that not proper food, so I came back. And then again found out some other place. Well, why you came back now after 15 days, again came back? No, there was nobody to speak, you know, so I came back. So, all these, it is not easy at all, friends. When we see in the house, or in the city life, there are so many problems. Let me go to forest for meditation. One of our Swamis used to tell that his own experience, that he went to forest for meditation and then had these problems. Oh, what to do? The mosquitoes start biting. You sit for meditation and in 5 minutes you find that all these mosquitoes, they come to just meet you and kiss you. So difficult things. The best is not change of place, but the change of mentality is what is required. It is therefore not getting away from work, but doing the work in right spirit. See, this is a very important thing to learn, that giving up the work doesn't make us free from work. It is doing the work with right attitude that makes us free from work. Arjuna was told this very important thing in an unambiguous, clear way, that nobody can live even for a second without doing work. So not doing work is no choice at all for you. The choice is to do work with right attitude or with wrong attitude. You are just driving, either you drive in wrong direction or right direction. That is the only choice we have. So, therefore, it is wise to drive in the right direction. So, this is the science of karma yoga, yoga of action. That know that you do the work that is your duty. Don't take up the work because of likes or dislikes. Then it doesn't become yoga. Not that this is what I like, let me do it. No, whatever work comes to you, let that become your way of worshipping or way of meditation or way of practicing detachment. Do that work with dedication. And doing your duty, that is what is called kartavya karma. Kartavya means duty, which etymologically means that which you have to do. Whether you like or you don't like doesn't matter at all. It is the path, or it is a medication that one is taking to make ourselves mentally healthy. Medication one doesn't take because one likes or dislikes, because you have to take it, you see. It is not, you don't take the medicine for the taste of it. It is not a candy that I like this flavor or that flavor. It is the medicine that you have to take. So the work also needs to be performed in that spirit. This idea and the details of this were discussed in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4 and chapter 5. In the fifth chapter, there came that very important thought that one has to learn to control our habits. When we observe that why am I not able to live up to the ideal, there are all these tendencies accumulated during the past life. Past life means not only the my previous births, but even in this life I have been doing so many things in a particular way. Now those impressions, those tendencies, they have become crystallized habits with me. They propel me. I am just bond slave of habits. Like a friend of ours, sometimes I tell him, going to Boston, he takes some exit that is a little farther away, takes a long route. So I told him, well, hey, this is shorter, why don't you go by that? He said, Swami, I am a creature of habit. I have been habituated to go by this, so I go like that. It is creature of habit. Means habit governs us. That yes, I am habituated to take cup of coffee. Without that, the day doesn't start at all, you see. It is, I have to have coffee, the creature of coffee, creature of tea, creature of all these habits. They govern me. And within that narrow limit, then I have to feel I am free. I am free to the extent coffee allows me to be. That is the meaning of it. That I am free only up to that extent. That coffee or alcohol or whatever allows me to be. There are so many tendencies. So Arjuna is told that one has to stand up against these, fight against these. One has to bring control in life. So, and one who can bring control in life, to the extent one can bring control in life, to that extent one becomes happy in this life. To that extent one becomes yogi too. To the extent that you become, you can exercise control on your personality, to that extent you become yogi, and to that extent you become happy. There is no other way of becoming happy. If you are being kicked around by others, what is the question of happiness there? That I get many times these the questions like that from different people, that why do I feel unhappy, or I know that I should not rely on others, but when some people behave like this with me, I feel happy, I get angry with them. what to do. This anger is not good, but it comes, you know. It just comes. I know that it hurts me. My anger hurts nobody, but hurts me. I heard a nice definition of anger. One of our friends here told me, he is not today here. He said that anger is the poison that we drink to kill other. That is anger. We drink the poison with the intention of killing somebody else. That is what happens to us with anger. So, how to control it? It is the other similar emotions also. Lust. How to control it? How to control our fear about so many things? Nobody likes to be afraid. One likes to live free from fear. Our government keeps on promising, you know, that let us fight against terrorists so that we can live in fear, live free from fear. But that is the more important terrorists are our own tendencies, our own habits. They keep on terrorizing us. And so living free from all fears, all such things is important, and that is what we have to learn to practice. It is a matter of gradually overcoming them through the tenacious, prolonged practice. One needs perseverance for this. And that is why this yoga that is going to come now is called Abhyasa Yoga, the yoga of practice. Put in practice, you won't see the result immediately. We try to see the result immediately. No, it won't come that quickly. It is that story I had told many times, but I can tell now too, just for memory, you know, that the gardener had planted many nice plants, and he was friends with the monkeys who used to live there. He had to go someplace, and so the monkeys took up the job. They assured the gardener, "Don't worry, we can water these things, plants, no problem. You can go after a week, for 1 week we can handle this, no problem." The gardener comes back after 1 week, all the plants were uprooted. "So why? What happened? Why did you do like this?" No, we were watering the plants, but we wanted to make sure whether it reaches the root or not. So we picked them up and saw. So it is, after 2 days, did a little bit of meditation or the spiritual practice and start thinking. Am I seeing some light or some, has my change come over me? If not, no use. It won't do. It requires really, really long, long practice, friends. It is, and that practice has to be done with dedication. It is not that you are doing this practice for somebody else. And no need to boast about it. You are not doing anything to the world. You are doing it for your own good. It is, as a secondary effect, it will make the world also good for you. That is another thing. But this is, the practice is being done for one's own good. So no need to boast about it either. It is also very important that we do it regularly. And all these things are matters of true practice. Like one is doing, you know, the bodybuilding. Or for some purpose you have to just do that discipline regularly. One lady, you know, they wanted to go for a long climb to Kailash. And then for about a year or so, she just refused to eat any sugar, or because that was the discipline. Not that she doesn't like it, but she knew that this has to follow this discipline. And she did it. That whenever I used to offer, hey, will you take this? Please take, this is so nice. No, because it is to be, you know, you have to do the practice regularly, determinedly. It requires lot of determination. Because somebody from inside will say, oh, take that sugar, that one day if you eat candy, it doesn't matter. Tomorrow you may not eat it, today you can eat it. But no, that doesn't work then. You have to be really determined. So, a determined, regular, unrelenting practice has to be there. And Lord concluded fifth chapter by saying that we have to have this learning of using our sense organs as doors, not just as holes. That the contacts, for example, eye sees an object. Now it is contact between the eye and the object. I don't have to bring that thing inside. Eye is a part of the body. It has come in contact with some object. Both are actually the outer things. I don't have to bring this inside the mind and disturb it. It is, let it remain outside. And then one should concentrate on the ideal. You can call it God if it helps. Not that it is, you have to believe in God. If it helps, believe. If it doesn't help, don't. But the question is, you should take all possible available help. Because the task is not very easy. For most of us, the idea of divine is very helpful. Certain forms are very helpful for some people. Not that they are universal. Some person would prefer one form, somebody will another form. But these are all the external helps. And if needed, one should not hesitate to take it. Because the goal is to be achieved. Now, with that, the fifth chapter ends. And the sixth chapter begins telling Arjuna. These two verses that come in the beginning, they tell that, look, the first verse says that they work, and giving up work means controlling the tendency to work. Both come at a proper stage in life. It is the stage in life is to be understood. Everything is doesn't come to a person simultaneously. So, it is the sixth chapter begins with this verse that who is really the monk? Arjuna, you wanted to give up the work and become a monk, a sannyasi. But who is really a sannyasi? Not the one who gives up the work. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Blessed Lord said, Anashritah karma phalam karyam karma karoti yah. Sa sannyasi sa yogi cha na niragnir na chakriyah. He who does the prescribed work without caring for its fruits is a sannyasi, is also a yogi, and not he who is without the sacred fire and without action. The external signs of monastic life, like somebody is putting on, like I have taken on these clothes, signs, external sign of a monk. But it is, anybody can just color their the clothes in this, you get the color in the shop, and does it make anybody a monk? It is an external sign, that's all. But the external sign does not make you that transformed from inside. What is the internal sign of being a monk? That is important, and that is told here. Anashritha karma phalam, that without caring for the result, means in the sense of selfish idea about getting something desired, without caring for that, this person keeps on working. What work does he do? Karyam, the one that work which has to be done. Out of desire we keep on seeking so many works. This person doesn't do that. Whatever needs to be done, that fellow does. So, karyam karma, whatever is needed to be done is done. And that person is a yogi, and also that person is truly a monastic. And to make this point go deeper, he gives the negative of that, not merely the one who has taken up the external signs of monastic life. That is, a monk is supposed to be having no house, and therefore no home, no house, and therefore doesn't cook, and therefore has no fire. So this person is without any cooking arrangements, doesn't cook, and doesn't have any action, prescribed action for this person, has given up all duties. So that is not the true sign of a monk. That may be the external symbol, but the true sign of a monk or a yogi, both, is that this person keeps on doing the work without caring, without craving, let us put it that way, without craving for any results. So this is the sign of a monk. This will be elucidated further. Our today's time is finished. Any questions? Yes, Terry? Well, that is a right step, I would say. That do it because it is needed to be done. Yeah, and don't bother whether it is the consequences or whether you feel happy or not happy. Forget about it. Yes, Charles?
If Lord Krishna says to work, which I guess is serving God and others, and saints have said they were willing to give up their liberation if they could come back and help others, then why are we seeking liberation for ourselves? That seems to contradict it.
Well, you seek then the liberation for others, fine, you know. That is why you first have to get liberated to give liberation to others, is it not? You can give only what you have. Very good. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehe Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko mantrah tasya namaniyane karmapyekam tasya devasya seva. Shri Krishna arpanamastu.